Hello, everyone. My name is Reese Karlinski, and this is Young History, episode 163 on Uganda. The capital of this country is Kampala, and the name Uganda actually means land of the Ganda in Swahili. The Ganda are the most identifiable ethnic group in the nation when it comes to genetics, and under the Ganda tree, there are many different people groups and clans that inhabit Uganda. On top of this, I'm just going to give you two quick facts. Uganda is ranked as the number three nation in Africa for its production of music and dance because this is a huge part of the culture here, and as Kampala has evolved into a very large urban center, the amount of music that flows into the land and then is exported out of the country is extremely high compared to the rest of Africa. On top of this, 77% of the population is 35 or under, making it one of, if not the, youngest country in the world. And that's pretty much all I have for you guys. I just want to get right into the history here because there's a lot to sort out with Uganda and one of the more famous dictators in history as of late. And that's that, so let's just do it. My name is Reese Karlinski, as you guys know. I'm very thankful for you guys watching, even though I don't know your reason, but whatever it is, hope you enjoy. And on top of that, this is Young History, and this is Uganda. Our origins begin around 100,000 years ago when the first people can be traced back to this land. Archaeologists and historians have come together to date the different bones and things left behind here and try to place them in a period of time, which we get around this date. But when it comes to actually developing a history in this far back, we don't have anything. Nonetheless, we do have our history that begins around 1000 BC with the Bantu migration. Bantu-speaking peoples began migrating into the area that is now Uganda between 1000 BCE and ended in 1 CE. They brought ironworking technology, agriculture, and new social and political structures that spread across the land. These migrations led to the establishment of numerous Bantu kingdoms and chiefdoms across the region. The Bantu came from around Cameroon and carried their culture across the continent. For the next few hundred years, there was no written recording of what happened, so I'm once again going to make a big jump. Around the 1300s, a few different kingdoms rose to control the region. The Bunyoro Kingdom, located in the western part of present-day Uganda, was one of the oldest kingdoms in the region to be established out of the city of Bunyoro. The kingdom of Bunyoro was founded by the Babito dynasty, with Rukidi Mpuga, also known as Insigmo Mpuga Rukidi I, considered the first king. There was also the Ankole kingdom. Ankole, located in the southwestern part of present-day Uganda, was founded by the Bahinda dynasty, with legendary king Ruhinda considered the first ruler. The kingdom was first known for its cattle-keeping economy, with cattle playing a central role in the society's economic and social life. The political system was characterized by a monarchy, with the Omugabe, or king, holding authority over the kingdom's affairs. The king was supported by a council of advisors and chiefs. Then there was the most prominent one, the Buganda Kingdom. Buganda, located in the southern part of present-day Uganda, emerged as one of the most powerful kingdoms in the region. The kingdom's origins are traditionally traced to the reign of Kabaka Kato Kintu, who is considered the first king of Buganda. Buganda was led by kings that inherited their clan from their mother's side, not their father, and their kings were called Kabaka. When a Kabaka died, the clan elders would select the next ruler from the eligible princes on the dead Kabaka's mother's side. The nation was divided along religious lines. Muslims were in the north, while Catholicism and Protestantism was present throughout the rest of the nation. European exploration of the interior of Africa, including Uganda, began in the mid-1800s. Explorers such as John Henning Speke and Richard Burton ventured into the region in search of the source of the Nile River, which led to increased European interest across the area. Christian missionaries, mainly from Britain, France, and Germany, followed the explorers into Uganda. They aimed to spread Christianity and establish mission stations. Among the most influential mission groups were the Church Monastery Society and the White Fathers. In the late 1800s, European powers, particularly Britain and Germany, began establishing colonial footholds in the Eastern African region through both treaties and democracy. However, there was many times that military force was used. In 1888, the Imperial British East Africa Company signed treaties with the local leaders in the present-day Uganda, which laid the groundwork for future relations. In 1890, British workers started to be brought into the area to build the Uganda Railway. This caused many Indian workers to remain in Uganda in order to make a trade or start a business here. A Muslim group formed and ousted the Kabaka around the same time, The British did not like this, so military forces were sent in. The British force quelled the group and reestablished the former Kabaka. This opened up the Buganda to the British influence. Protectorate status was achieved in 1894. A British governor was also appointed. Public officers executed government orders on behalf of London's desires. As the move towards independence became more clear, Ugandans wanted to know how an independent Uganda would be structured. Because by this point, jumping to the 1950s, 40s, that range, the world wanted to decolonize in wake of World War II and knew that calling for peace and all these things would not happen unless the world was decolonized. So the protectorate under the British of Uganda started to sense that change was coming. And because of this, many supported the Kabaka royal family and wanted them to have a large role in the government that could be formed after independence. This group of supporters was called the Kabaka Yeka, or KY, which meant king only. The Democratic Party, or DP, wanted a very democratic monarchy system that expanded rights across the board for all people. The KY were supported by the British because their goal would have upheld the system the British ran through. Milton Obote was a Ugandan politician that founded the Ugandan People's Congress, known as UPC. He did this to form a voice for the non-Buganda population. An alliance with the Kabaka Yeka was formed. The DP won all the elections until 1964, but the alliance of the KY and UPC still held a lot of power in the government because of how many people it represented. Nonetheless, independence was officially achieved on October 9th, 1962. By 1964, the UPC gained a lot of seats in the government, and Obote rose to Speaker of the Government. This was the highest non-head of state position that you could be in Uganda. Sir Frederick Mutasa, the Kabaka of Buganda, became the first president. He worked alongside the head of the government, Milton Obote, to get changes to come. However, the two frequently clashed because Mutasa didn't respect Obote since he was not of royal descent. There were many divisions in Uganda because the north was made up of the Nilotic people groups and the south was Bantu. The debates over how to handle the different needs of the people in the nation was also a dividing factor between Obote and the president. In 1964, soldiers of the military launched a mutiny and took the defense minister hostage. Obote reached out to British soldiers for help in the hostage situation. The military refused to comply unless Idi Amin, who was a prominent military officer, was made the defense minister of Uganda. In 1966, support for Obote had waned, but Idi Amin and Obote had simultaneously gotten very close. Obote heard rumor of the opposition trying to stage a large demonstration against him, so he sent Amin to deal with it. The demonstration was organized by the Kabaka Yeka, who was trying to gain power back for the Kabaka, and the British supported them. Amin and his forces arrived, then a battle was fought against British-trained forces. Amin brought out heavy machinery to end the fight against the British-backed belligerents. However, the Kabaka fled to London and never came back to Uganda. Obote also used Amin and his forces to oust the government that opposed him and keep himself in power. Obote became a dictator when he enacted military rule across Uganda. Amin was extremely effective because he was a member of the King's African Rifle, which was an elite group of African Central Forces trained and trusted by the UK. He was also named Alfendi in 1959. Which was the highest possible rank for a black African soldier within the British military. Obote also funded trips for Amin to go to the UK so that he could learn new special ops skills and gain more military prowess. The relationship between Amin and Obote did begin to sour because Obote became more and more jaded against Amin's tactics. Obote then fired Amin. In reaction to this, Idi Amin led a coup in 1971 that ousted Obote from power. The coup by Amin was brutal because he was noted for his ruthlessness and aggression in combat throughout his military career. Obote fled to Tanzania and began to build a support system. Then Idi Amin took power across the nation. He also ascended to become a dictator. He allowed the military to act freely as long as it was in his favor. He created the Public Safety Unit, which was a militia with military training and just as much ruthlessness as Amin. He ruled for 8 years. He gained the title Big Daddy for his strong arm in politics, but his enemies called him the Butcher. British Indians were deported because they were marked as useless by Idi Amin after they built the Ugandan Railroad. And here's where we get to the nasty parts. Amin accused people groups like the Bantu of being allies of the Obote, so he ordered mass killings. In his 8-year reign, around 300,000 Ugandans were killed under accusations of treachery, even though most of these allegations were completely falsified. He deported any non-Africans he saw as a possible threat. Amin also exiled the entrepreneurial minority of Indians from Uganda, and this weakened the business sector of the country and caused the economy to rapidly decline. Amin directly murdered two of his wives. He chopped one of them to pieces and delivered her chunks to the hospital, and on top of this, he was a cannibal. There are reports of him eating human flesh of his victims to scare his enemies and because it was seen as a powerful delicacy to the man himself. The rivalry between Amin and Obote crossed borders. Ever since Obote went to Tanzania in refuge, there was a growing resistance to Amin and Uganda. So in 1972, Uganda invaded and started the Uganda-Tanzania War. As soon as the war began, it became very clear how large the gap between a well-trained, well-funded army, the Tanzanians, and a ragtag group of militia fighters under Amin was. The Tanzanian force was extremely successful and pushed Amin's forces out of the nation and started their own push into Uganda. Despite support from the Palestinian Liberation Organization and Libya under Gaddafi, the forces of Amin were definitively defeated by the Tanzanian force. The Palestinian Liberation Organization and Idi Amin's forces worked together again. Amin supported and sent troops to participate in the Palestinian hijacking of an Air France flight in 1976. This did result in lives being lost. The Tanzanian army was also very successful because some of its tacticians were Ugandan exiles that took refuge in Tanzania with Obote. One of them was Yoweri Museveni, who became very important in the rest of Uganda's history. More on him later. In 1979, the Tanzanian army pushed into Kampala and Amin fled to Saudi Arabia. He took refuge there and was never tried for any of his crimes in Uganda, a country to which he would never return. However, Obote did return. The Ugandan National Liberation Front, or UNLF, formed to stabilize the country after Amin was ousted. At this point, Uganda's standing army was almost non-existent because of how many service members died or fled because of the war. So many different military generals formed their own militias so that they could have sway in the nation. One of them was Yoweri Museveni, who commanded a sizable militia numbering in the 10,000s or more. Obote ran for an election in 1980 because of Tanzanian support. However, once the election actually came, tensions were very high because all the candidates tried to unite Uganda along ethnic lines in order to win votes. On top of this, Obote also called for a one-party state to return. The Democratic Party stood firmly against this in the election, and it proved successful because they won a majority of the seats in the government. However, the UPC that Obote was running with claimed that they won the majority of seats and therefore won the election, despite the Democratic Party already claiming victory. Nonetheless, Obote became president because he was supported by a strong military force. Yoweri Museveni stated that he would not allow the results of this election to be upheld. So he formed the NRA, or National Resistance Army, to challenge the government. And just like the NRA in the United States, they were very, very well armed. The Ugandan Bush War, or Ugandan Civil War, was fought after this from 1980 to 1986. It pitted the official Ugandan government and its ally, the Ugandan National Liberation Army, against rebel groups led by the NRA. Military rule lasted the length of the war. The war went back and forth, and there was a lot of brutality, including many significant generals being killed in accidents or helicopter crashes. Nonetheless, it would be the Museveni force that gained victory when they marched on the capital of Kampala in 1986. In this same year, Yoweri Museveni rose to the head of state. He has been in power for 38 years since this date. The Lord's Resistance Army, LRA, formed to challenge the corrupt regimes in Uganda and East Africa. There is also the extremist resistance group called Al-Shabaab. Conflicts between the Ugandan government and these groups have extended the violence across parts of the nation. The conflict has also placed hundreds of thousands of people into other areas of the country because they were heavily displaced. In 1995, Uganda adopted a new constitution, which established a multi-party political system and guaranteed fundamental rights and freedoms. However, Museveni and the NRM have faced criticism for restricting political competition and suppressing dissent, particularly through the use of the state security forces. Opposition parties and civil society organizations faced challenges and restrictions under Museveni's rule. There was harassment, arrests, and a lot of intimidation. Opposition leaders, activists, and journalists have been targeted by the government. Some of them forcibly disappeared, killed in accidents, or removed from polls. Uganda implemented economic reforms in the 1990s, including the liberalization, privatization, and structural adjustment programs aimed at promoting economic growth and development for the struggling nation. While these reforms led to some improvements in the economic standing, they also contributed to the very prominent income inequality gap, unemployment, and the social disparities that reigned across the country. As the 2020s began, Uganda continued to grapple with high levels of youth unemployment, poverty, and social changes. Despite economic growth and there being many development initiatives taken, many young Ugandans face limited opportunities for education, employment after school, and social mobility, which has continued to raise the social unrest and discontent with the government. In 2021, Uganda held general elections, which were marred by allegations of irregularities, violence against voters, and repression of opposition candidates and their supporters. Museveni was reelected for a sixth term, extending his presidency further amid criticism from domestic and international observers who say that democracy is dead in the nation. He beat out a popular politician who had a lot of support from the younger votes for his unique personality. His name is Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu. He is known as Bobby Wine. This is because of his passion for his country and the unique charisma he brings to politics. He accused the election of being the most corrupt one in Uganda's history, so he did not accept the results. Bobby cited that the government was accused of shutting down the internet in voting centers, launched accreditation requests, and abused human rights in all the polls. For all these claims, he was arrested in late 2021. But ever since his arrest, protests and uprisings have gripped Uganda to challenge the government to be much more democratic. All of that gets us to the present, where Uganda has seen the economy grow 6.5% every year since 1990. The corruption of politics through the National Resistance Movement and Museveni continue to this day, just like it has for 30-plus years. The main issues in Uganda are violence outside of the urban areas and extreme economic inequality. On top of this, Uganda is torn apart by the international community for some of the most stringent anti-LGBTQ laws in the world besides the Middle East. The traditions and different deep religions that are present in Uganda have caused there to be a strong distaste for homosexuality in any of its forms. And homosexuality is considered a very egregious crime in Uganda, where people can serve life in prison, be beaten, and in some cases be put to death. So it's an extremely bigoted and prehistoric way to view the rise of the LGBTQ community. And with the rest of the world modernizing and accepting things, it's very sad to see how far Uganda has gone to stand on very old, nasty traditions. So nonetheless, that gets us to the end, where I was going to do a takeaway and a mindset. And with Uganda, that's going to be understand that change is necessary. I say that with Uganda for very obvious reasons. The government of this country has refused to allow change for 30 years. A lot of the old traditions in this country prevent the change and acceptance of anything to do with the LGBTQ. And there's a lot of other things that can be said. Now, I do not want to use this as a reason to just take a dump on Uganda. The people here have actually very well accepted this. There have been changes in the country. There are so many different new cultures and cultural flares that come up in Uganda because people were willing to change. They came into the land with a lot of different influences and became an independent country with a lot of turmoil. But as technology has changed, the way people communicate has changed, Uganda has adapted. That's why there's so much music, art, and dance that come out of this country, because the people of Uganda have accepted change and allowed new platforms and new medias to be the basis for their arts. Now, I also want to bounce back to the government, which is they have not done this. The government and many different aspects of it have been very stuck in the mud and stuck in their ways, and it means that it's a weakness. Not accepting change and not being open to it has been a weakness in Uganda for the political part of it, while it has been a strength for the people. I say for you, you should do exactly what the people are doing. Accept change, encourage it, accept that it's going to be the best thing for you if it's coming. Nothing stays the same for too long. Nothing does. Not your relationship, not where you live, not your standing in life. It can always change, and it does change pretty frequently when it is put on a larger scale. So I say accept it. Accept that change is coming, and accept that if it is at your front doorstep or there's a change you can make, it's probably going to be for your betterment. And change is the best thing that can happen because life is full of surprises and you need to accept it. So just like the Ugandan people, and in spite of the Ugandan government, you should accept change and accept that it is good so that you can open up towards better aspects of your life. And I feel that's something I need to work on. I feel that's something we all need to work on, because change comes, and I guarantee there's something that our generation is very hard on accepting, despite us being very accepting of things that make the older generations crazy. We're very accepting of LGBTQ, at least in most of the world, and we're accepting of religious differences. We're accepting of people being atheist. We're accepting of so many different weights, shapes, and sizes that make the older generations very mad. And I guarantee 20, 30 years from now, when our kids are teenagers and telling us different things, we're going to be hard-headed and be hard to accept those things too. But the best way to combat that is accepting that change is always going to come. Very, very few things stay the same. And the best way to live life is to accept that those changes will come. And that is that. I feel like that's a great takeaway for the history we studied here with Uganda, and that is all I've got. This is a very storied nation, been through a lot throughout the history, and does represent a lot of different aspects of not only East Africa, but Africa as a whole, and I'm very glad I was able to cover it today. So thank you guys so much for hanging with me, if you're still here, and as always, it does mean a lot. So I'm just going to sign off now and tell you guys I hope you have a good day. So my name is Reese Karlinski, that was Young History, and that was Uganda. I hope you guys had a good one. Bye-bye. Thank you.